Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's conference call will now begin. All lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, you would press star 1 and record your first and last name only. Please be sure that your mute button is turned off when you're recording your first and last name. If you need to withdraw a question, you would press star 2. The call today is being recorded. If there are objections, please disconnect. And now we'll turn it over to Lauren Gacius. Thank you. You may begin when ready.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining NOAA's media teleconference on the 2020 hurricane season outlook. Speaking today will be Department of Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, Dr. Neil Jacobs, the acting NOAA administrator, Dr. Jerry Bell, NOAA's lead hurricane season forecaster, and Carlos Castillo, Acting Deputy Administrator for Resilience at FEMA. The outlook itself will be posted on NOAA.gov. With that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Jacobs to go ahead and open our call.
Thank you, Lauren, and good morning, everyone. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce Secretary Wilbur Ross, whose support and leadership, particularly during these challenging times, has been essential to our mission of protecting life and property. Secretary Ross.
Thank you, Neil, for that introduction and for your leadership at the National Oceanographic and Atmosphere Administration. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's annual NOAA Outlook on the 2020 hurricane season. The U.S. is fortunate to have the world's best scientists, computer, and modeling experts and meteorologists providing us with ever-increasingly accurate forecasts of tropical storms. These experts are constantly learning from current and past weather events. They are analyzing massive new data streams, and they are on the cutting edge of deploying new technologies. This past February, NOAA announced the purchase of a new high-performance computer system to further improve its forecasting models with higher resolutions and greater clarity. The two new Cray supercomputers have tripled the computing capacity and double the storage and interconnect speeds of the previous generation of systems. Each of these computers has a performance rating of 10 petaflops. That is 12 petaflops. That is 12 1,000 million, or 10 to the 15th power floating point operations per second. They are among the biggest and fastest machines on the planet forecasting weather. This summer, NOAA will also upgrade its hurricane weather research and forecast system. It will integrate vast new data streams from satellites. NOAA's coastal Doppler data network and ocean models to produce even more precise forecasts of hurricane tracks and intensity. Americans in harm's way will be given the critical time needed to heed warnings and take cover. I encourage everyone in a location that may be impacted by a strong tropical depression to pay attention to our Hurricane Center updates and warnings. And it's not just people directly on the coast who should be prepared. A great deal of damage and injuries are the result of inland flooding. So everyone needs to have a plan to contend with power outages and property damage caused by high winds and heavy rains. And having a sound plan is especially true this year, given the need to stay safely away from the coronavirus. Again, thank you for joining us today, and congratulations to the staff of NOAA for their completion of the 2020 hurricane season outlook and for their continuing record of achievement. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Ross, for your remarks. We very much appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today and open the call. Today, NOAA is issuing its annual outlook for the upcoming hurricane season, not with our usual backdrop of our hurricane hunter planes. The current health crisis and resulting health guidance, including social distancing, are on all of our minds as we take the necessary steps to stay healthy. This is especially important as we factor those actions into planning how to take the right safety precautions when a hurricane or other severe weather threatens. However, this hurricane season is no different than any other in the sense that early planning and preparedness is essential. Our FEMA guest, Carlos Castillo, will discuss preparedness later on. What I want to emphasize now is the time to ensure that you have a plan in place. The outlook that I'm about to present was produced by Dr. Jared Bell, NOAA's lead hurricane season forecaster and his team. Dr. Bell will speak with us shortly to address the ocean and atmospheric factors leading to this forecast. NOAA's outlook for the 2020 Atlantic hurricane season indicates that an above normal season is most likely, with a possibility of that season being extremely active. Specifically, there is a 60% chance of above normal season, 30% chance of near normal season, and just a 10% chance of below normal season. The 2020 Atlantic outlook calls for a 70% probability for each of the following ranges: 13 to 19 named storms with top winds of at least 39 miles per hour. Of those, 6 to 10 will become hurricanes with top winds of at least 74 miles per hour, and that includes 3 to 6 major hurricanes, Category 3 and higher, with top winds of at least 111 miles an hour. At this time, it is not possible to predict how many of these potential storms may hit land, but as the season progresses, the skilled forecasters at NOAA's National Hurricane Center in Miami will produce the timely and accurate track and intensity forecast that the public and decision makers rely on. Throughout this hurricane season, forecasters with the National Weather Service will maintain watch 24/7, issuing critical forecasts for expected hazards from storm surge and high wind to tornadoes and inland flooding. The NOAA hurricane hunters are prepared to investigate any developing storms and collect critical data to improve the accuracy of the forecasts. We do have a few new things for this season. NOAA will upgrade the Hurricane Weather Research and Forecast System, or HWARF, model this summer to incorporate new data from satellites and coastal radars. This will help improve forecasts of hurricane track and intensity during the critical watch and warning timeframe. NOAA will also upgrade Hurricane in a Multiscale Ocean Coupled Non-Hydrostatic Model, or HMON, to include higher vertical resolution, improved physics, and improved coupling with ocean models. NOAA will also begin assimilating GPS radio occultation data from the Cosmic 2 satellite constellation in our models. These are 6 satellites we launched last June, which produce profiles of temperature and moisture in the tropics and mid-latitudes. Also this season, NOAA and the U.S. Navy will deploy a fleet of autonomous subsurface gliders to observe ocean conditions in the tropical Atlantic and Caribbean Sea. These are just a few of the many advancements we've put in place to ensure that NOAA is ready for what the hurricane season may bring. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jacobs. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Jerry Bell. Jerry is NOAA's lead seasonal hurricane forecaster with the Climate Prediction Center.
Thank you all for joining us. As we just heard, the 2020 Atlantic hurricane season is expected to be a busy one, and there are a number of factors driving this prediction. Now, historically, those factors typically produce an above-normal Atlantic hurricane season. The first factor is a continuation of the conditions related to the ongoing high-activity era for Atlantic hurricane seasons that we've been in since 1995. These conditions include warmer ocean temperatures and weaker trade winds in the Atlantic hurricane main development region. They also include weaker vertical wind shear and an enhanced West African monsoon. The next factor is the likely continuation of ENSO-neutral conditions, or possibly the development of La Nina. ENSO stands for El Nino Southern Oscillation, It's a climate pattern related to changes in ocean temperatures and wind conditions across the equatorial Pacific Ocean. ENSO has three phases, El Nino, neutral, and La Nina. Neutral conditions are currently in place. They don't inhibit hurricane formation, nor do they suppress the features of the ongoing high-activity era. However, now, if La Nina develops in time, it would reinforce those high-activity era conditions and further increase the likelihood of an above-normal season, with activity likely near the upper ends of the predicted ranges. NOAA will update this outlook in early August, as we do each year, to provide the latest information for public preparedness at the onset of the peak months of the hurricane season. The peak months of the Atlantic hurricane season are August, September, and October. If 2020 becomes an above-normal season, it will make a record of five consecutive above-normal Atlantic hurricane seasons, and this would surpass the previous record of four set during 1998 to 2001. Needless to say, the active hurricane era that began in 1995 continues. I encourage everyone to visit the National Hurricane Center's website at hurricanes.gov throughout the season to stay on top of watches and warnings as they emerge. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Lauren.
Thank you, Jerry. With that, I'd like to welcome our next speaker from FEMA, Mr. Carlos Castillo.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for your time this morning. I'm Carlos Castillo. I'm the FEMA's Acting Deputy Administrator for Resilience, and I hope you and your families are staying safe and healthy. While FEMA continues to lead the federal operations to the whole of America response to the pandemic, we have not taken our eye off the ball in responding to other disasters that may occur during this time. However, preparedness is not just a federal responsibility. Every American has a role to play. For our response to be effective, it needs to be locally executed, state-managed, and federally supported. As we begin hurricane season, there's been great interest in how FEMA is preparing to lead response and recovery efforts for additional disasters, such as hurricanes, wildfires, and tornadoes during the COVID-19 environment. Keep in mind, though, that this year will not be the first time that FEMA has managed more than one large disaster at the same time. In 2018, the agency responded to two major hurricanes on the East Coast and the worst wildfires in California history. At the same time, thousands of FEMA employees were still working recovery efforts for the devastating 2017 hurricane. This year, FEMA has already responded to severe weather events during this pandemic, like the devastating tornadoes in the Southeast, and we're ready as we monitor Tropical Storm Arthur. I want to reassure the nation that FEMA continues to take deliberate and proactive steps, working closely with our state, local, tribal, territorial, federal, nonprofit, and private sector partners to safeguard our ability to respond and recover from future disasters that may arise during this pandemic. And these include expanding capacity at our National Response Coordination Center. We acquired temporary space near our headquarters to increase operations if necessary, and we can increase the cadre of FEMA employees and surge forces with the right skills and training. The agency is also well-positioned to provide financial reimbursements. Approximately $6.2 billion has already been obligated for the COVID-19 response, and nearly $80 billion remains in the Disaster Relief Fund. Regarding our workforce, even with more than 3,100 FEMA employees supporting the COVID-19 response, we can rely on our 20,000 employees who are committed emergency managers. Since 2015, we've increased our total workforce by 43%, adding roughly 1,200 people per year on average. Additionally, we have onboarded more than 500 employees since the President issued the nationwide emergency declaration on March 13th. We also have the unique opportunity to implement a surge capacity of thousands of employees from across the federal workforce willing to serve with FEMA during times of disaster. For individuals who may have to evacuate, we are working with our state, local, tribal, and territorial partners, along with voluntary agencies, the private sector, and other non-governmental organizations to develop plans for supporting disaster survivors, to include adjusting shelter plans to adjust for social distancing. FEMA just released the COVID-19 pandemic operational guidance for the 2020 hurricane season to highlight planning considerations for states, localities, tribes, and territories while responding to COVID-19. Now, these guidelines, they describe anticipated challenges to disaster operations. They highlight planning considerations for emergency managers based on current challenges. They outline how FEMA plans to adapt response and recovery operations. They create a shared understanding of expectations between FEMA and emergency managers, and they include guidance, checklists, and resources to support emergency managers' response and recovery planning. This guide is available through the FEMA.gov website. FEMA is working with our partners on their locally implemented, state-managed, and federally supported shelter planning efforts under the COVID-19 environment to ensure the safety and security of all by following CDC guidance. One example from this spring followed tornadoes in the southeast when states used hotel rooms to ensure survivor safety while maintaining social distancing requirements. We are planning for the use of technology to continue our response and recovery efforts. We are establishing virtual operations to continue to support field operations with remote deployed personnel to limit travel and protect the health and safety of survivors and the workforce. FEMA is also prepared with plenty of resources, and we have replenished supplies in our distribution centers across the country with water and shelf-stable meals. Additionally, we have meals in vendor-managed inventory purchased by FEMA but stored in a vendor warehouse, above and beyond the number of meals we normally store in our distribution centers. Some notes on personal safety and preparedness. So additionally, FEMA's Ready campaign has joined with CDC and the Department of Health and Human Services to ensure that Americans have the best preparedness information possible for hurricane season occurring in addition to this pandemic. The public taking steps now to prepare is the best way to increase their community's preparedness. So we ask everyone to take the time now to visit ready.gov/plans and review all of your emergency plans to see how COVID-19 may alter them. Know your hurricane risk. Hurricanes are not just a coastal problem. Find out how rain, wind, and water could affect you where you live so you can start preparing now. Find out if you live in an evacuation zone. You may have to evacuate due to a hurricane. Learn your evacuation routes. Practice including your household pets and identify where you will stay. It's preferable to stay with family and friends outside the evacuation zone than at an evacuation shelter. If you must go to a community or group shelter, remember to follow the latest guidelines from CDC for protecting yourself and family from COVID-19. Be prepared to take cleaning items with you, like soap, hand sanitizer, disinfecting wipes, or general household cleaning supplies to disinfect surfaces you may touch regularly. Maintain at least 6 feet between you and persons not part of your immediate family while at the shelter by avoiding crowds or gathering in groups as much as possible. Anyone over 2 years old should use a cloth face covering while at these facilities. In closing, a prepared citizenry will lead to better prepared families in our neighborhoods, cities, and towns, ensuring that states, territories, and tribes will be truly ready for challenges that come with disasters. During this time when many families are under stay-at-home orders, it is a great opportunity to prepare for any disaster they may face in their community and plan how to respond to disasters in the COVID environment. I encourage everyone to download the FEMA app, which is also available at our website, for helpful preparedness tools and to receive weather alerts in your area. Also visit ready.gov for information on how individuals, families, children, and businesses can prepare for the upcoming season. Our main goal is to help keep people safe and carry out our mission of helping people before, during, and after disasters. That is the purpose of this call, to inform the American public of what they should be doing today to prepare for any disaster that may occur this season, and to do it safely under these historic conditions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now move on to take specific questions about today's Outlook announcement from reporters. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. I'd ask for your patience as it may take a few moments for our questions to come in. Operator, please remind the call participants how they can get into the queue to ask a question.
We will now begin our question and answer session. If there are any questions over the phone lines, please press star 1 and record your first and last name and who you would like to answer your question if you need a specific person. If you need to withdraw your question, you would press star 2. Our first question comes from Brian Thomas. Brian, your line is open.
Hello? Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Are you
able okay? To yeah, I'm Brian Sullivan. I'm not Brian Thomas. That's why I was also the question I have, you know, and given that COVID is such a high point in everyone's minds, what advice do you have to people who are ordered to evacuate or suggested to evacuate who might be hesitant in the face of a storm? You know, should they want to hunker down as opposed to fleeing their homes? What would you tell them?
This is Carlos Castillo from FEMA. Identifying that risk now, you know, on the positive side, a lot of people, especially with the busy hurricane seasons, the last few seasons, a lot of people are aware, and they're aware if they live in an evacuation zone. And, you know, listen to local authorities who have the most up-to-date information, including the National Hurricane Center for local forecasts. But if you are in an evacuation zone and you are ordered to evacuate, you should plan to go to some place, maybe friends and family's homes that are outside the evacuation zone. And if you are outside the evacuation zone, then, as you say, hunker down or you can shelter in place at your home is usually preferable if it's safe. And part of that includes making it safe from the wind. You know, we used to say you run from the water and hide from the wind. Typically, evacuations are because you live in low-lying areas or evacuation zones that are predetermined. So we tell people to plan for that now. If you do have to go to a shelter, an evacuation center, evacuation centers, you have to keep in mind, they're meant to keep you safe, but not necessarily comfortable. So it's a place where a lot of people will gather. They'll implement social distancing and other measures in according to CDC guidelines, but it's preferable to go to someone's home if possible.
Thank you. Let's take our next question.
Our next question comes from John Schwartz. John, your line is open.
Hi, this is John. I'm wondering, looking at the looking at the number of years in a row, I realize there are larger cycles at work, but can anybody talk about the possible role of climate change, especially considering Monday's study that suggested that hurricanes are, in fact, getting stronger over time because of the influence of climate change?
Yeah, hi, John. This is Jerry Bell. It turns out that for the Atlantic, the climate signals such as these multi-decadal fluctuations in activity and also El Nino and La Nina, they so dominate the signal in the historical record that there's, as that study indicated, there may not be any global warming signal really to be seen in the Atlantic yet because of these other factors are so huge. And in fact, if you look back through the historical record back to the 1800s, you'll see that there's no real trend in Atlantic hurricanes or really in the number of hurricane landfalls. Instead, what's really dominating that signal is a climate pattern called the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation. It's a well-known climate pattern, and it produces historically anywhere from 25 to 40-year periods of increased activity, then decreased activity. So we've been in what's called the warm phase of this Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation since 1995. Similar conditions we saw in the 1950s and 60s when we had a high activity era. So that pattern is really the underlying climate signal that's giving the increased activity. Now, what I'm trying to indicate here also is that there are multiple climate patterns that can affect hurricanes. So NOAA isn't just involved in global warming scenarios and potential impacts, but we also want to study and understand these and predict these other climate patterns as well because they're so prominent in the record.
All right, thank you.
Our next question comes from Peter King. Peter, your line is open.
It's Peter King with CBS News Radio, and I guess this is a question for our FEMA representative because you're the one who's been talking about social distancing and COVID-19 and all that. Your advice to seek a shelter with friends and family outside the evacuation zone is one thing, but I'm wondering what you're hearing about local areas planning for more shelters, since capacity for each shelter is certainly going to have to be reduced because of social distancing.
Yes, sir. This is Carlos Castillo from FEMA. So the planning has begun, and it goes on every year for especially for evacuation centers. There'll never be enough evacuation center space, even in a year when we're not dealing with COVID-19. There'll never be enough evacuation center space for the number of people that are asked to evacuate for a large and maybe a large disaster, large impending hurricane. So it's always at the local level that the instruction is and the guidance is to, if you can, if you find have family or friends outside the area or at hotels outside the evacuation zone where you can plan to stay, you'd be more comfortable and safe. Hurricane evacuation centers are meant to keep you safe, but it's not necessarily comfortable. And yes, the numbers are decreased. The number of spaces will necessarily be decreased because of the need for social distancing. But there's also other shelters that are typically brought, evacuation centers that are brought online based on the expected need and the category of storm. So there's a lot of planning that's gone into that. And I can speak at a general level. For the specifics, people, we expect people to monitor and listen to what either is posted or advertised by local emergency management, who have the best picture of what exists at the local level.
Our next question comes from Chloe Johnson from Post and Courier newspaper. Chloe, your line is open.
Hi, this question is really for Carlos, and I just missed part of your answer just now, so apologies if I'm retreading. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm thinking about when we have an evacuation, already the scramble for hotel rooms. I understand friends and family if you're evacuating is preferred, but I know also the Red Cross with the tornadoes we had earlier this spring already was placing people into hotels as opposed to the shelters they might otherwise set up. So I'm wondering, is there a concern on FEMA's part in just the existing inventory of hotel and rental space along the coast and whether, you know, that could really lengthen evacuation times for folks that don't have another place to stay and who are trying to avoid a shelter, just that competition for hotel rooms?
Yeah, this is Carlos Castillo from FEMA, and thank you for the question. I'll address one of your points first, lengthening evacuation time. You know, especially at the local level, we work closely with the National Hurricane Center. Typically, as they're issuing watches and warnings, we'll know ahead of time and to be able to get messaging out at the local level when it is time to evacuate. Usually there's a lot of time that's provided to evacuate, and clearly that varies depending on the track, intensity, and speed of the storm. But typically there's enough time to do it safely if you start planning now when there isn't one, and whether it's planning for hotel space or, like I said, friends and family. And when it is time to evacuate, sometimes people wait too long. You know, as the evacuation order is given, the weather is still not bad, and people tend to doubt, you know, perhaps. But if they, once the evacuation order is given, if they plan to do that early on, they'll have more time. Because once the weather turns, then it's probably late to do. So people that would heed that warning early on and do it. And yes, the numbers will be there, and it's necessarily tighter because of the social distancing. But the Red Cross has also been planning, and they've been updating their national mass care strategy, taking this into account. So I think there's a lot of preparedness that's ongoing at all levels. and we want to make sure that that's happening at the individual and household level as well.
Carlos, you said the numbers will be there. The actual inventory of hotel rooms you think is sufficient to handle this season?
So I think we just can't count on hotel rooms.
Okay.
There'll be public, you know, evacuation centers that are designed to, you know, there's a difference between evacuation centers which have to withstand the wind load that's expected. They have to be outside the evacuation zone, different than what you use as a post-storm shelter or typically what you use after a tornado, for instance. So that has to be taken into account. I think there's always a challenge in having enough evacuation shelter spaces for an oncoming, especially a major hurricane, and that's why we always encourage people to use friends and family or go somewhere else if possible.
Okay, thank you.
Kim Miller from Palm Beach Post has our next question. Kim, your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for doing this presentation. So my question is, some of the previous forecasts that we've seen this season or early season have compared the current state of the atmosphere with 2005. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that and what it will mean for this season.
Yeah, this is Jerry Bell from NOAA. I never want to compare one season with a single other season. And that's because there are a number of factors that go into making ultimately a certain season. 2005, just so people know, was by far the strongest hurricane season we've ever had. There were 28 or 29 named storms, 15 hurricanes. We're predicting this to be an above normal season, possibly extremely active, but at this time our ranges are well below that what we saw in that record 2005 season. But that ultimately doesn't matter. What matters is that we're expecting yet another above-normal season, and now is the time to make sure that you're getting prepared for this season. This could be the fifth above-normal season in a row. And when we're in a high-activity era such as we are right now, that's when we see more tropical storms and hurricanes strike in the United States. So this is the time to start getting prepared. Don't worry what some other season did. Make sure you know what to do this season.
Can you, just a quick follow-up, can you go a little bit more into detail about the abnormal warmth in the Gulf and in the main development region?
Sure. The main development region is the tropical Atlantic and the Caribbean Sea. That's where, if conditions are favorable for an active season, you're going to have an active season. That's really the key area that the hurricane outlooks look at. Right now, the sea surface temperatures are about half a degree Celsius or 1 degree Fahrenheit warmer than average in the Caribbean Sea. We're expecting the main development region to remain warmer than average, as it has since 1995. So what we're seeing is really the whole set of conditions we're expecting this year is what we've seen throughout this high activity era. It's really nothing new. Now, as far as the Gulf of Mexico waters have also been warmer than average, but that's not necessarily a factor for the season as a whole. Some of these active seasons, you don't see anything in the Gulf of Mexico, yet the Gulf of Mexico is by far the warmest place in the whole Atlantic Basin as far as sea surface temperatures go. So there's other big factors going on in the Gulf of Mexico, like wind shear, that really help to modulate the activity there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's take our next question.
Alexander Kaufman from HuffPost has our next question. Alexander, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I was wondering, you know, earlier this week, NOAA released a study showing that climate change is strengthening hurricanes. To what extent, if any, are you seeing in the models now that's a factor in this year's forecast?
This is Jerry Bell from NOAA. No, it's not a factor in this year's forecast. The main climate signals we're looking at are this ongoing high activity air conditions with the warm phase of the Atlantic multi-decadal oscillation. And we're also looking at no El Nino. So we're not, so if no El Nino means it's, that's not going to suppress these high activity era conditions. If La Nina develops, La Nina favors more activity and would reinforce the ongoing high activity era conditions. Those are the main climate patterns. And as I had mentioned on a previous question, the Atlantic is a little bit different than some of the other hurricane basins in that the historical record is dominated by this multi-decadal variability and this El Nino-La Nina signal. Those are really dominant signals, and they're controlling the strength of the hurricane season. Whether ultimately we have more hurricanes at the top of the Category 4 and 5, the particular study you're referring to was saying, well, we're not sure. We're seeing it globally, but because of these other climate signals in the Atlantic, we're just not sure if we're seeing anything above those other climate signals yet. They're very important questions, but don't get locked into just the ultimate hurricane strength. There's other issues with global warming, such as rising ocean temperatures. Warmer waters mean higher sea levels. Higher sea levels mean more storm inundation as a hurricane's approaching. Now, the problem with that is our coastlines have built up tremendously over the last several decades, so that there's potentially many more millions of people in harm's way every time a hurricane threatens. So there's a lot of issues related to storms, global warming, overall climate patterns in general, and NOAA's really involved in all of that, all of those avenues of all of those issues. Thank you.
We'll take our next question.
Our next question comes from Alex Harris with Miami Herald. Alex, your line is open.
Thank you. There's been some reporting about how is under COVID we've seen commercial plane flights dropping dramatically, and that means less weather data available for forecasting, less collection happening. Has that had an impact on NOAA's ability to gather data?
This is Jerry Bell. Sure, Neil, you can do it.
Sure. So there has been a decrease in the aircraft data. We refer to that as ACARS or AMDAR. Typically, the impact of that data is a few percent, so losing about half of the data, we would expect maybe a 1 to 2% decrease in forecast skill. But the problem is we don't have a control parallel version of the weather models with all the data. So we can't say for sure if there's a degradation or not, but I would like to mention that we're expecting to go live next week with a GPS radio occultation from 6 new satellites orbiting in the tropics and mid-latitudes. And the expected improvement in forecast skill from that data, I think, would surpass any degradation we would see from the drop in commercial aviation. I'd also like to mention that we do get a lot of aircraft data from package carriers, and these flights are operating largely as normal compared to the commercial aviation.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question.
Our next question comes from Tom Frank with ENE News. Tom, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for doing the call. A question has to do with the start of the hurricane season, June 1st, and the consideration being given to moving that date up. What are your thoughts? This is for Dr. Jacobs or Dr. Bell. What are the pros and cons of moving the start into mid-May or early May? And what's the timetable for making a decision on whether to push for an earlier start date?
I'll turn it over to Jerry, but just in general, this is something that we have been looking at. But like we've been discussing on previous questions, we're really trying to isolate and identify the high activity signals from the Atlantic multi-decadal oscillation versus making a change to the season that wouldn't be linked to some type of oscillating climate signal. Do you want to add on to that, Jerry?
Mm. Just in general regarding the some of these May storms, we have been seeing in several of these past seasons a preseason storm. But according to the National Hurricane Center experts, these storms are typically short-lived and weak, as we just saw, and also they're often hybrid or subtropical systems. They're now being better identified because of better monitoring and so on, but also because policy changes to now name subtropical storms. And what we're seeing just overall, since about 2000, we're just naming about two more a year of these weak, short-lived storms that were just not observed in the record. So that's some of the issues. It's not necessarily a climate signal that we're seeing with these May storms. It may just be just that they weren't recorded before for various reasons. So the Hurricane Center is weighing the possible advantages and disadvantages of these start dates and that.
And is the only significance of the start date the preparation? Is there any significance? What is the significance of the start date?
This is Jerry Bell from NOAA again. We have a predefined hurricane season that's June 1st through November 30th. Perhaps the most significant is that it gives a nice fixed date to start preparing for the hurricane season. Now, typically, during June and July, we only see one or two named storms, and you might see a hurricane during June and July every several years. But it really depends on the conditions that are in place. By far, the bulk of the season or the most activity is August, September, and October. That's when, again, by far, you have the most hurricanes and major hurricanes, and that's the peak of the hurricane season. But nonetheless, some of these short-lived storms, you need to be ready because, a slow-moving tropical storm can produce 10 or 15 inches of rain over a big area and produce a lot of inland flooding. And those are the type of preparations that can be accelerated once you have a fixed start date to the season.
Thank you.
We'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from Mark Slutstein. Mark, your line is open.
I'm in New Orleans, and we have some other different evacuation problems, as I'm sure you're all aware. The new guidance from FEMA yesterday says targeting evacuation orders and communication messages to reduce the number of people voluntarily evacuating from areas outside a declared evacuation area. That sounds nice, but in our area, we're already looking at expanding the time frame for when the evacuation will start by 10 hours this year, speeding up that process, which means that a larger portion of the coast is likely to be included in an evacuation. Plus, there's the whole question of these larger storms creating large rainfall events that our area is more susceptible to. How do you balance this issue of trying to reduce the number of people you're evacuating from areas that are not within storm surge zones and high wind zones with that issue that's for South Louisiana?
Well, this is Carlos Castillo from FEMA. We spoke and I mentioned that is a challenge on people evacuating, the number of people that are evacuating. Some people evacuate that don't live. And first of all, I have to start by saying, we provide general information and general guidance that needs to be tailored to the realities at the local level. And that's why we say that the most effective emergency management is locally executed, state managed, and federally supported. There's bound to be difference, and each area will be unique based on what your risk and hazards are and your vulnerability. So we know that it's a balance that has to be done thinking far enough ahead. One of the, I'd say perhaps the toughest decision for an emergency manager is to decide and to recommend to elected officials that there be an evacuation. When you have to make the decision it's not an absolute. When you have to make that decision to get people out, depending on what the clearance times are, basically how much time you're expected to need to get everybody out safely, you won't have a definitive answer from the forecasters because it just doesn't exist yet. So there's usually a big latitude there of information and of timing that, especially if you move the evacuation requirement sooner, it'll be tough. And it's why you should start planning now if there are places that aren't in an evacuation zone to make those places hurricane resistant with windows, when taking a lot of steps to make sure that mitigation is there, and it's been going on throughout the year in a lot of places. But clearly, in South Louisiana, you have your different challenges, and that has to be taken into account early on and planned for, so that when you determine when to evacuate, it's a decision that's done and communicated, but that the need to do it is communicated with the community as early as possible.
And a quick follow-up, if I could. This year, because of COVID and the problems with people losing jobs, there are a heck of a lot of low-income people, especially in South Louisiana, who have very little money. Are you guys looking into how that is going to affect evacuation decisions and the ability of providing people who don't have any money the ability for alternatives like hotels?
So that's typically a local issue that, we know, to answer your first question, even before COVID, we know that a lot of people, it's difficult for some people to take steps like keeping 3-4 days worth of food to store supplies and everything else when they don't know where their next meal is going to come from. We get that. We know that financial preparedness is important, and it's been one of our objectives is to increase the nation's financial disaster preparedness, because knowing that it is a problem out there, and it's, like you said, it'll probably be exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. So, first of all, public shelters will be available, in both pre-storm and post-storm, and for people that need it. And excuse me, and which is why we encourage people that don't need to evacuate to, if they can stay home and be safer there, then there'll be enough room for those that have no place else to go and have to evacuate. And that's, again, it's a local decision and local planning efforts that has to be done to identify those populations and how it will be addressed.
And when those local organizations don't have the money to do it either.
Mark, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Lauren Gacious of No Public Affairs. Let's follow up after the call, if you don't mind. We just have a little bit of time left, and we do have additional reporters waiting to ask questions. So, operator, if we could take the next question.
Yes. Our next question comes from Elvina Nawaguna from CK Roll Call. Elvina, your line is open.
Simple one, probably for Jerry. When you mentioned above normal, and pardon me if you've already explained and I missed it, but what is considered normal?
This is Jerry Bell from NOAA. An average hurricane season produces 12 named storms, 6 hurricanes, and 3 major hurricanes. This year, we're predicting 13 to 19 named storms, so that's above average, above normal. 6 to 10 hurricanes, that's centered above normal. And 3 to 6 major hurricanes, and that's also centered above the long-term averages, so it's above normal as well.
Okay, so you said 12 named storms, 6 hurricanes, and 3...
major hurricanes.
Okay.
Those are the averages.
What is a major hurricane? Is that more than 39 miles per hour?
A major hurricane is maximum sustained wind speed of 111 or more miles an hour. That's those really strong storms.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's take our next question.
Our next question comes from Greg Allen with NPR. Greg, your line is open.
A question for Jerry. Jerry, would you give us a little more detail on La Nina? What is it you're looking at? What does La Nina, what kind of patterns affect hurricane development, and when's the next update come on that?
Sure. This is Jerry Bell from NOAA. La Nina is a counterpart to El Nino. It's a naturally occurring climate pattern that we see in the Pacific Ocean. La Nina refers to when the ocean temperatures in the equatorial Pacific are cooler than average. What that does is it affects the wind patterns up at jet stream level in such a way as to weaken the vertical wind shear downstream over the Atlantic. And when the wind shear is weaker, that becomes ripe time for more and stronger hurricanes. So that's why La Nina is an important player in this hurricane variability game. Right now, or over the past several months, temperatures in the equatorial Pacific were above average, about 1 degree Fahrenheit above average. But just in the last several weeks, they cooled off quite a bit. So now they're near average. But some of the models are saying, hey, that cooling could continue and perhaps get us into a La Nina as the summer progresses. If that happens, those models are saying that La Nina would likely be strong enough to further increase the Atlantic hurricane activity. It's not a given right now. Right now, NOAA's latest forecast is for a 50% chance of neutral conditions in the Pacific, no El Nino or La Nina, but a 40% chance that La Nina could develop, which we're just not sure yet, partly because this time of the year is just a low-confidence time as far as predicting the whole El Nino-La Nina signal several months in advance.
And when do you expect to update that? When do you give us the next word on that?
It was just updated on May 14th. I'm not sure the exact date, but somewhere around the 10th of June.
Great, thanks.
Sure.
Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Boyer. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for doing this. John Boyer, Richmond Times-Dispatch, and I think this would go to Dr. Bell. Is the ENSO trajectory you were just talking about the main source of uncertainty in how the season would play out, or are there other factors that would change these favorable conditions and maybe get us into that lingering below normal probability? And also just want to clear up one small detail. Is that expected count of 13 to 19 named storms, including Arthur, which already formed, or would that be going forward in addition?
Okay, this is Jerry Bell from NOAA. Let me hit the last question first. We're expecting 13 to 19 named storms for the season as a whole, so that does include Arthur.
Okay.
Now, I'm sorry, what was the other part of your question?
Oh, so is that issue with forecasting the El Nino-La Nina cycle the main source of any uncertainty in this outlook? Were there other factors you're considering that might change things to be more or less favorable down the line?
Oh, yeah, okay. No, that's the main source of uncertainty right now. We're not seeing anything that would indicate a high likelihood of a below normal season. Instead, we're seeing everything that would indicate a high likelihood of an above normal season. We've seen these conditions before, the warm phase of the Atlantic multidecadal oscillation, either neutral or La Nina in the Pacific, and that combination of conditions historically has produced above normal seasons with the likely ranges that we're actually predicting this year. Now, as I mentioned, the uncertainty is whether the main uncertainty is not whether the season is going to be above normal. It's kind of how more active could it be if La Nina develops. If La Nina develops, the activity could certainly be near the upper end of our predicted ranges.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much.
This is Lauren Gacious. We're coming up at the top of the hour, so we're going to take one more question.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Vanessa Duncombe. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Actually, Janessa. But This question's for Carlos Castillo. Can you address if increased COVID-19 testing will be part of FEMA's disaster response?
So we're supporting testing and throughout, but as far as, I mean, that's separate from hurricane. You know, we're supporting it. We don't do it directly, and that's primarily a Health and Human Services Department in their lane.
Is there any coordination? Just really quick follow-up question. Is there any coordination with them to ensure that, say, after a storm or hurricane hits, that increased testing could be available to that impacted community?
Sure, that's part, yes, and that's part of the pre-planning that's going on to, you know, first to ensure safety when, as a storm's approaching, should it approach in an area where they're conducting testing, and then follow on is that's part of what's evaluated to continue. Typically, that's a local thing, a local executed plan, because they'll know what the assessment that they begins at the local level, and they'll know when to be able to start their first priorities for life safety naturally.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is Lauren Gates again with NOAA. I just want to wrap up our call today, and I want to again thank our speakers, Secretary Wilbur Ross, Dr. Neil Jacobs, Dr. Jerry Bell, and Mr. Carlos Castillo for their time and for participating in today's briefing. An audio file of today's call will be made available online. It'll be located at the bottom of our press release on NOAA.gov. It takes a little bit of time for us to grab that file, so please be patient, and we will post it as soon as it's available. Finally, if you have any follow-up questions today for me, Lauren Gacious at NOAA, or for Dr. Jerry Bell, please call at 202-740-8314. Again, 202-740-8314. If you have a follow-up question for FEMA or for Mr. Castillo, you can reach out to the FEMA News Desk at their email address, which is fema-news-desk@fema.dhs.gov. This concludes today's call, and I thank you all for joining us.
Thank you. This conference has ended. You may disconnect at this time.